Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead inside the Business Radio X studios.
Yes, indeed. It is that time again, Friday, July 17th, and you're listening to another episode of Georgia Business Radio. I am your host today, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and sitting alongside me is my producer, engineer, Rich Casanova.
I am here, ready for duty, reporting for duty, sir.
Well, great.
Great show here today.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Got a couple unique guests in our studio today, so let's say hello to them. First, Henna Inam, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
Very good. And what will you be sharing with our listeners today?
I will be talking today about authentic leadership and how all of us need to be more authentic in our leadership in our workplaces today.
That sounds like an interesting topic, and you're an expert in leadership and authenticity, right?
Well, I would say that I'm learning about all of that, and I also write a lot about this topic.
Okay, we'll look forward to hearing more about that. Let's introduce also our other guest is Mike Watkins. How are you doing, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good, and what will you be sharing with our listeners?
I'll be talking about my software company called Verified.
Verified, and what does that do for folks?
Verified is a software platform that has digitized the foreclosure process and protects the borrower's rights.
Interesting. So this is something we'll get more into in detail here in just a moment, but we'll turn our attention back here to Henna. She is CEO of Transformational Leadership, Inc., an executive coach and speaker. She brings 20 years of global senior leadership experience with Fortune 500 companies. She graduated from Wharton School with an MBA and participated in the executive education programs at Harvard Business School. Welcome, Henna Inam. How are you?
Thank you, Ryan.
Good. You have a new book out. It's called Wired for Authenticity. When did that recently come out?
So that came out in June of this year, and it's really exciting because after a lot of stops and starts, the book is finally out.
Hot off the press, as
Hot
they say,
off the
right?
Press. Yeah.
And we got a copy here in the studio for us to enjoy later. So tell us a little more detail. What is inside that book, and what can readers hope to gain from that?
Yeah. So the reason I wrote the book is as an executive coach and having spent 20 years in corporate America myself, one of the things that I have noticed with my clients and a lot of my speaking engagements is that people are really looking for more trusted relationships in the workplace. Our workplaces are changing very rapidly. People are working 24/7. I think you've all seen that from the people that you interview. There's a lot of stress in the workplace, and that creates, and there's a lot of restructuring that's going on. And so that creates even more tension and lack of trust. And so the goal here as it relates to leaders is how can you create trusted workplaces in an environment where there is a lot of stress? And that is through the power of authenticity.
So you're making yourself an authority of leadership and then helping to build those relationships within the workplace.
Yes, it's all about building much more authentic and inspired relationships in the workplace. So the real work can get done and we can focus on, you know, having people be inspired, be really engaged in the work that they're doing.
Now, is this your first book?
This is my first book.
All right. And the feedback from it's been pretty good so far?
It has been. I have a lot of Amazon reviews on the book, and they're mostly good, which is great. And what I'm really inspired by myself is I'm in the process of creating a movement for greater authenticity in the workplace. And so inviting a lot of people who are leaders in organizations and other leadership experts to really join me and create a community so that we can have more inspired, engaged, authentic workplaces.
Now, how long did it take you to write this book?
You know, I wrote it in 5 months.
Really?
Yes.
So all
it was a pretty inspired process.
But
yes.
Years leading up to that.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Right. And you wrote it all on your own? Did you have a co-writer or anything?
No, it was written on my own. I had somebody editing the process, editing and working with me in the process.
Tell me about a little bit about your writing process. You just sit down in your office, or do you like to spend a lot of time in your favorite spot in the house? How did that go for you?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. So I had stopped and started and stopped and started, and then I think it's sort of one of those things. It's like once you really decide what the topic is and the topic itself really inspires you, then I found myself within those five-month time period I had a hard time stopping writing because it was just sort of, I wanted to write all the time. And what was amazing through this process is that I happened to be having lots of different coaching conversations with coaching clients, and a lot of them were related to what the topics were that I was writing in the book. So the book actually has a lot of stories about leaders and some of their struggles with authenticity in the workplace.
So you find yourself dedicating time each day to writing, or just whenever you felt inspired, you'd sit
down? It was more around inspiration, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then just write until you couldn't write
anymore. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you had to get that all put together in a nice package, give it to the editor so they can put it in, it flows nicely. How long did that process take?
Well, it was a concurrent process. So the, you know, August through December process was I would write a chapter, send it off to them to look at, to edit, and back and forth. So it was done by the end of December.
Oh, very interesting. Now, in the book, you discussed the seven practices that are integral to the authentic leadership. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah. So the way that I define authentic leadership, it's the fullest expression of me, but it's for the benefit of we. And a lot of times there's a lot of myths around authenticity. You know, it's sort of, this is me, take it or leave it. And yet our workplaces that we work in today require us to be incredibly agile because things are changing all the time.
Right.
And if we are going to be responsible leaders, responsible for our impact with the people that we lead, we have to also be very adaptive to the situation at hand. And so that's why I define authentic leadership as the fullest expression of who I am for the benefit of the people that I lead.
Oh.
And so the seven practices of authenticity are really, I call them practices because the way that I talk about it in the book, authenticity isn't a destination that you need to get to. It's more of a practice that you practice every day in the moment of who you're being, being fully yourself in terms of how you make decisions, how do you have tough discussions with people that you need to have. Even, you know, in today's circumstances, how do you restructure an organization and still keep your soul?
Right. No, that's all perfect. You stay authentic to yourself and who you are and really what you bring to the table, and don't be influenced by other outside people in the workplace or, you know, cultural environments, whatever it may be. You got to stay true to yourself. But you also talk specifically about female leaders.
Yes.
And so I imagine that's something you're very passionate about, females in the workplace, particularly in the C-suite.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So in my corporate career, I spent 20 years in corporate America, and now as an executive coach, most of my clients tend to be, you know, senior women leaders in organizations whose companies want to invest in them to grow them. And one of the things, there's a lot of very interesting research around this topic. The research suggests that if women in particular don't feel like they can be authentic in the workplace, they actually lower their ambitions to climb the corporate ladder. And so that is actually that's an issue that is not just impacting the women in the workplace, but it's also impacting the workplace in terms of the level and quality of thinking and the diversity of leadership that we have in workplaces.
No, that makes sense. And we're talking with Hina Inam. She is the author of the book Wired for Authenticity. She also has the website transformationalleadership.tv. Right. And so some more information about women in the business. Fortune 500 companies with three or more women in board positions created a competitive advantage over companies with no women in their board in the following three areas: return on sales, 84%, return on invested capital, 60%, and return on equity, 46% advantage. And that source is Catalyst. So right there is just, you know, straight from your website, some information about how important it is to have women in leadership roles in business.
Absolutely. And you're up on the numbers, Ryan. That's good. Good research.
He's done his homework. Yeah.
He's done his homework. Awesome.
Well, we also host a show out of the Sandy Springs studio, Atlanta Technology Leaders, and we often feature women in technology, the WIT edition, where they bring some of these high-profile female CEOs into the studio to interview them at length about how important it is. And they give back, starting at a young age, to some of these young girls, Girl Scout age, particularly in science and technology, and how they can be cultivated even at that young of age to you know, groom them for, you know, leadership positions as they get older in their careers.
So, absolutely. I think that is so important. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and one of the things I've been talking to her about is, you know, how do we how do we get her into exposure to coding and mm-hmm. other kinds of things. But absolutely, that's so important.
Yeah, science and technology, definitely we need more women involved with that. And the younger you can get them interested and headed in the right career path, the better. So,
yeah. And I guess the one other thing I will say to you that is actually very much in alignment with the data that you shared is that they've done a lot of research that says, you know, the one single thing that helps teams be more effective in terms of their decision making, in terms of their results, is basically diversity. Mm-hmm. It's the number of women who think differently on teams, because obviously diversity of thinking adds to better decision making overall for any organization or team.
No, absolutely true. Rich, you got any questions?
Yeah, just kind of a from a business perspective. I know we talk a lot about corporate culture, but how do you coach someone at a C-level or a managerial position in terms of, you have to, you know, you always hear the customer is always right,
mm-hmm.
but is that in conflict with being authentic? You know, I don't know. Does it seem to be a struggle for people, that balance of trying to accommodate that client or that employee,
mm-hmm.
but being true to yourself, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. how do you determine that line, right? Because you want to appease them, make them happy.
Yes.
But maybe if it's in conflict with your...
Yeah, so you're raising a really great point, Rich, because that is where authenticity really... you know, the old definition of authenticity used to be just be true to yourself.
Right.
And what I'm proposing in the book is an authenticity is a moment-by-moment choice that we make to show up and hold a paradox, right? So how am I able to be true to myself, my values that are right. really important to me, my sense of purpose that really drives me, and at the same time be very present to the impact I'm having over there? And so it's not one or the other. What you have to do is be able to hold that paradox and in that moment make a choice, and through a conversation make a choice about how you're going to influence one another to make the right decision for the benefit of the entire organization.
Yeah, and especially if it's a large organization, or even probably more of a challenge with a smaller organization, because you're wanting to, is it the organization adopting your beliefs? But if you're working with people with other beliefs, I don't know. I just definitely see that as a
it is. It's a very tough. It is. It is a tough conflict. Yes.
You know, you want to accommodate them, but if they're not aligned with you,
yes. Then you work. Then the work, the real work, is the process of alignment. Right.
Okay,
it's you don't abdicate your responsibility to yourself, and you don't abdicate your responsibility to the other person that you're leading. And so then in that process, once you know that you have to be present to both, then you start to create something with them. And it all comes down to the power of trust.
Is kind of the old adage, apply, we agree to disagree kind of thing, right? So I don't always have to adopt them or believe, and vice versa, right? But we can still find some common ground. And so long as it's not too far away, because at some point you probably have to say, this is not... a fit.
Yes.
Right? And we need to part ways.
Yes. And there are times when you make that decision. But what I want to stay away from for our listeners here is any kind of formula. Because we're not talking about compromises here. What we're talking about is making a decision in that moment for the situation that you're faced with. And tomorrow you may make a completely different decision because the situation is different, or you're different, or the person you're dealing with is different. And so what it really requires, and a lot I talk a lot about in the book, is about being more mindful in your leadership and not really working out of formulas to say, well, I'm going to find a compromise, but to be really finding something that is unique to that moment, unique to that situation.
One more quick question. You mentioned the 7 practices. I don't want to give away all the secrets or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But what are one or two of the ones that just bubble up at this moment that you want to maybe share?
Yeah, so I'll talk about 3 practices that really bubble up. So the first is choose be before you do. So who are you going to be in this moment before you take any action?
Okay.
And because who we are isn't the same person. You know, think about it. Who you are with your best friend isn't the same person as who you are with your boss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who you are when you're angry or scared or is not the same person as when you're most inspired.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really choose who you're going to be before you do something. That's one of the big
choose
practices.
Who you are in that moment.
In that moment, okay, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
In that context.
In the context. The second practice I want to talk about is facing the dragon. And facing the dragon is all about,
exactly. Do we need swords?
You got to bring your own sword. And facing the dragon is really all about facing your own fears. Mm-hmm. We've all been in situations where we're inspired to be or do something, and there's a lot of pressure around us to do something different. Mm-hmm. Or we want to choose a career path that is different, but we have a very stable job, and we're afraid that we're going to lose our livelihood. And that, so facing the dragon is about facing your fears and learning how to deal with your fears and choosing your inspiration above your fears.
Mm-hmm. No, fear is a natural part of life.
It is.
And you can either embrace it or you can run from it.
Yes.
And understanding it really is the first part of what are you going to do with it?
Absolutely.
You know, we all are afraid of something and on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And so making those decisions accordingly is super important.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
So good deal. You can look for more. Yeah, go ahead.
So you had a third one, I believe?
Yeah, so I'm happy to share the third one. The third one that I want to talk about is called Dancing with Your Dream. And Dancing with Your Dream
as opposed to Dancing with the Dragon?
Yeah, exactly. You could choose to dance with the dragon, too.
Exactly,
that might be my next book.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
Like you said, Ryan, you
dance
face
fear.
The fear or you just embrace it.
Yeah.
So I like
with
to slow dance with my fear.
There you go. So Dancing with the Dream is really all about figuring out what truly inspires you.
Mm-hmm.
What is a passion that really drives you? And so many people are afraid of losing, you know, their jobs, or they're afraid of like walking away from their steady paycheck. And what I talk about in terms of Dancing with Your Dream is to say, well, you know, bring whatever passion you have and bring it to your workplace. Too many people believe that I got to do this 9-to-5 thing and then my passion is after 5 p.m. And I really encourage people to figure out whatever that passion is and bring it to the workplace, because our workplaces need our passion. They need they need people who are inspired by what they're doing.
That's why I got into radio. You know, talking is my passion.
Yeah.
You know, listening to people's stories, I love that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every day, you know, it is enjoyable to come here to work and bringing that passion into the workplace.
Absolutely.
It's great.
What were you doing before, Ryan?
Oh, I've done 100 different things before.
Yeah.
But prior to this, I had my own home dog training business.
Oh, wow.
For 5 years. I went to people's homes and trained them and then their dog.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause that's where it starts.
Where it starts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, but that was just most recently before coming into the radio about 2 years ago now. Been here with Buckhead Radio X for almost a year now. So,
are you having fun?
I enjoy it. Yeah. The people we meet every day, the subject matter we talk about is so much more enjoyable. You know, I did some morning drive time radio as well, and that was fun, zany Zoo Crew kind of stuff. But this is definitely more interesting. We learn actually from every guest that comes into the studio every day.
Yeah, it's like we were saying earlier this morning at a meeting, it's like the world's greatest think tank.
Right.
And we get to enjoy these conversations with subject matter experts.
No doubt about it. And you hosted a show on Business Radio X at one point.
I did. So,
tell me about that experience
for you. That was wonderful. It was called Transformational Women Radio. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed, because of my passion to help women advance in organizations, I interviewed a lot of senior women leaders. And we talked a lot about what it was that they were doing to be successful in the workplace, and also what some of the challenges were and what advice they had for our listeners who are mostly female leaders climbing up the ladder.
Mm-hmm. And so that a great experience, a great subject matter, something you're passionate about.
Absolutely.
And getting the word out about how we can continue to find that balance within the workplace between women of all diversities and backgrounds, and helping that just, you know, propel the leadership out there in the workforce even better. So again, referring back to that Catalyst study in 2012, women represented only 16% of board seats in the U.S., and they hold only 14% of executive offer positions in Fortune 500 companies in the U.S. So there is a little imbalance right there that we can certainly work on as a group, as a society, to help make it more, you know, balanced.
Yeah. Like less than 5% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a small number.
That is a small number. Right. And particularly now, if you think about, you know, women represent at least 50%, if not more, of college graduates today.
Mm-hmm.
And if things continue as they are today, it's going to take us many decades to close that gender gap. So.
Right. So let's continue to work to shorten that time and get some more women out there in the workforce.
Do
for
either one of you have daughters?
I do not.
No.
No daughters.
No.
Yeah. You do have mothers, though.
Yeah, I do. Right, yeah. And she was a hard worker.
She was a hard worker.
She was never a CEO or anything. She was CEO of the house.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, yeah.
But she certainly inspired me to work hard, do the right thing, and follow your dreams and follow your passion. She certainly encouraged me to be where I am today. So thanks, Mom. And hopefully she's listening today, too, as well.
Nice.
So we've been talking with Hina Inam. She is the author of the new book, Wired for Authenticity. And how can folks find that book?
So they can order it on Amazon or any of your favorite, you know, online or sites that you can go to. Or you can go to the website, www.wiredforauthenticity.com, or you can certainly go to my own company website. It's called transformleaders.tv.
Okay. And that's .tv. That's right, a little different there. And also you can follow Hina on Twitter at twitter.com/HinaInam. I spell HennaInam. Also on Facebook. And connect with her on LinkedIn if you're out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And please join my authenticity movement at work, And please email me, write me, find me, because I'm really, my passion is to create and find leaders and bring together a community of people who really care about authenticity in the workplace. So please find me.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us today. Stick around, please, as we continue the conversation. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Georgia Business Radio here from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios. You can tune in live every Friday at 10 a.m. on BuckheadBusinessRadioX.com. We are on the air then. So let's turn our attention now to Mr. Mike Watkins. He's CEO, founder of Traditional Title Services, the largest title company and creator of Verify, the first and only digital compliant foreclosure auction platform. Mike has a degree in accounting from University of Texas in Austin and is a registered investment advisor. He started Traditional Title Services in 1994 when he was just 22 years old and has gone on to pioneer changes in that industry in both process and technology. A few years ago, he spun off a new company called Verify that is changing the way foreclosure process works, ensuring the borrower's due process is protected and confirming that foreclosure sales have been conducted in a legal, verifiable manner. Welcome, Mike Watkins.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So let's talk a little bit about your background first. You started a company at 22 years of age. What inspired you to do that?
Well, I got a degree in accounting, and the reason I got that degree is that my parents would only pay for my school if I got something that I could actually go and take and use as a job. And when I graduated, I did not want to be an accountant, but I had some friends who were working at several accounting firms, and I was fairly heavily recruited, not necessarily by the firms, but by my friends who said, it's not what you think it is, you're not going to hate it. So I accepted a job, and 6 weeks later, I quit. I hated it more than I thought I would.
So then you started on your entrepreneurial road at that point. And you know, what led you to Traditional Title Services?
Well, I had always planned on going to law school. So before the summer before my senior year of college, I went to work as an intern for an attorney. And I don't want to say I learned how to do titles, but I did some title work for him. Mm-hmm. And when I quit the accounting firm, I had probably about 6 months, a six-month wait before law school started. So I decided, well, I'll just start a title company, and it doesn't really matter if it succeeds or it fails because I'm just waiting around to go to law school anyway. Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another, and I just kept continuing to do it, and then I delayed law school again, and then when it finally came time to register for law school, I saw the list of classes they wanted me to take and realized that this was not for me. And at that time, Traditional had grown some, and I had, you know, an income. So I just continued with that.
Right. And so, but you guys revolutionized how title process were due here in Georgia. You had used to be attorneys doing it or legal clerks doing it, right? And then you brought in just regular folks wanting to work and were able to have them do the title research.
Well, what we did was we analyzed the data that was needed for each title search, and we broke it down into little units of work. And we were able to turn a title search, which had historically been done by a single individual, into more of an assembly line type process. But included in that, we were able to add layers of verification and layers of review. Mm-hmm. And even by adding the additional units of work, we were still able to produce it in a more efficient process. I would say very similar to an assembly line, sort of what they did, you know, with a Model T, although we were nowhere near as revolutionary as that.
No, the analogy Rich likes to use all the time was the black Model T. That's all he offered. He refused to make another change in the color, change in the style, and eventually someone else came along and you know, advanced on his pioneership there. So, but you guys have been able to stay nimble and pivot as the market changes, as technology changes, and keep adding that to your system over there.
That's right, and that's probably been the most challenging thing over the past 21 years that we've been around, is that it seems that every 6 or 7 years there's some sort of revolution. And when we look back now in 2015, when we look back into what things were like in the late 90s, they're completely different than what things were like in the mid-2000s. And that's completely different from what things look like now. So it really seems that every 6 to 8 years we have this really significant shift. And keeping up with that is extremely difficult because you don't know where that shift is going, and you can't wait for that shift to occur before you start making changes. So much of what I do is looking out on the horizon, trying to anticipate where I think things are going to go, picking up on trends, trying to determine what things will look like a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and starting to make preparations for where we think things are going to go. And sometimes we are right, sometimes we're very, very wrong. We've had a mixture of both, but we have been fortunate that the moves we've made have helped us survive. You know, real estate's had a very rough time over the past 10 years, extremely rough. And many of our competitors are no longer around. Many of the largest law firms that were doing it are no longer around. It's been exceptionally challenging.
No doubt about it. So you stay ahead of the cutting edge.
We try to stay ahead.
Yeah, and so that led you to start Verified 2 years ago. And what was kind of the impetus behind that? What brought that to the table?
Well, the real estate market was heavily dominated in the past by purchases and refinances. But when the housing crisis happened, it became dominated by foreclosures, unfortunately. And we had a limited amount of experience in dealing with the foreclosure process. We had a lot of experience in dealing with the foreclosure title searches. But as the housing meltdown happened, we were asked by our customers to take on more responsibility of that process. And specifically, that responsibility was the actual conducting of the foreclosure sale or the foreclosure auction. And Georgia and Texas are the two most unique states for that process. And for Georgia and for Texas, all of the foreclosure sales for the entire month are carried out on the courthouse steps on the first Tuesday of each month between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. So you have this enormous, really enormous amount of work taking place in Georgia in 159 different counties. And you have to get it done within a six-hour window or there's a penalty, a financial penalty. So when we started doing this, we realized that the methods that were in place before we got there, which is just to send someone there with a car and have them read something from a piece of paper, was going to cause a lot of issues. And we faced some of those issues. And the biggest issue that we faced was that people challenged the foreclosure sales. The sales are required, like I said, to be done between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. at the location, at the county seat where the property is located. And we had people that were saying, I was here all day, you never showed up to do this sale. And the difficulty with that is that if you're trying to prove that you were where you said you were at a certain date and time, how do you do that?
Yeah, you could just be sitting at home reading it and then never and even near the courthouse, and somebody could claim that you never showed up. Or you could be there and that person was on the other side of the courthouse and never saw you. So you're right. How do you track the actual reading of the foreclosure document, time, date, and place?
That was the challenge that we faced. So while we were working on technology to give us some infrastructure to help us manage these tasks, we were faced with an overwhelming number of challenges. And so what we did is we developed a technology that really tracks every button push of everyone working on every file for the foreclosure process. So we can, with the data that we pick up, really create a digital story. I call it digital breadcrumbs, that we can really see where someone was at whatever particular time, We know down to the second when they pressed each and every button. And so for a traditional foreclosure sale, which would have had maybe one or two data points, which would have been self-verified, mm-hmm. we are now generating upwards of 40 data points per sale. And that's all available immediately and in real time for our customers to use so that they can help defeat challenges. And I'm very proud to say that since we've had Verified in place, we have not lost a single challenge, nor have we come close to losing a challenge because we have such an overwhelming amount of data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no way to forge that, you know, almost literally impossible based on using smartphone technology, using, you know, iPad technology, what have you.
That's actually a great question. So the way the process worked before is that someone would go out to the courthouse steps, and I know for most of the people listening to this, this is a very foreign process, although I would like to mention that this process is very significant to the global economy because, you know, housing plays such a huge role. And I like to think that if Verified was in place, we wouldn't have had the meltdown that we had. But going back to the process that was in place before was that people would show up to the courthouse with a stack of papers. You mm-hmm. may have 100, 150, 200 sales to read in any particular day, and each sale is around 6 pieces of paper. So if you've got just 100 sales, you're dealing with 600 mm-hmm. pieces of paper. And sales are fluid throughout the day, meaning people can stop a sale, people can file bankruptcy. Something that's going to sale always doesn't continue going. So we would constantly be on the telephone, getting information to stop something, start something, and the logistics were really terrible. So what we developed was a way to do the sales on a mobile device using the location services from those devices so that we would know exactly where someone was standing when they started the sale, along with the date and time that sale was started. And then we would track that entire sales process using Amazon Web Services so that nobody could edit it. Mm-hmm. And then we would also capture that same data for when the sale was ended. So essentially, we would know the date, time, and location that each sale was started, the date, time, and location that each sale ended, and the technology that we developed connected all this to the opening and closing of a document so that we would also know what document was opened at that location.
Yeah. So that makes it easier for the seller, makes it easier for the buyer, and more importantly, makes it easier for the attorney or the foreclosure firm that's actually handling the sale of that. And you're providing all those services along the way.
That's right. So we've provided what we've calculated to be about an 80% efficiency gain for the attorney that's carrying out the sale, because instead of them picking up a telephone or sending emails to get something done, everything now is done with the click of a button and everything reacts in real time. But you also highlighted something else there that I'd like to expand on, which is the buyers. The housing market, for the most part, has recovered fairly significantly. Mm-hmm. And there's a group of unsung heroes out there. And I really think they are, you know, unsung heroes that are investors that realize that this was a good opportunity for them. And they have purchased an enormous number of these properties. And neighborhoods are much better with a investor buying a foreclosed house rather than the bank owning it. The banks are not good property managers. Mm-hmm. But someone that purchases a property will make sure that the house gets fixed up, will make sure that the lawn is mowed. They keep everything in good order, and they put tenants in there. And something that we've seen that we think is really special is the number of homeowners or borrowers that have stayed in their property because an investor bought it. Mm-hmm. If the property gets foreclosed and the bank takes it, the bank is going to evict you. But an investor just wants a tenant. And I have seen countless times, and we believe the number anecdotally is around 20%, of people going to the courthouse steps, unfortunately watching their house be foreclosed, but going to the person that just bought it and said, "You just bought my house, do you want a tenant?" And I have never seen the buyer say no. They always say, "Let's go talk." And that's an incredible thing for people to be able to keep their kids in the same school district, mm-hmm. to not interrupt their lives. And it's one of the things that's really inspired us to keep going with this.
That's an excellent point. You know, foreclosed homes happen for many different reasons, but most importantly, people want to have a place they can call home, and whether it's a illness in the family or loss of a job, whatever reason their house gets foreclosed on, we don't want to have to just kick them out and be homeless after that.
That's right. And look, the foreclosure process is not pretty. We like to think of it sort of being like chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is not a good thing to have, but it helps a lot of people get better. Mm-hmm. And we have a very unique opportunity in this country, which they don't have in other countries, which you can find a house that you want to live in. You can put down a very, very small amount of money compared to most countries in the world, and a bank who does not know you, based on a very limited amount of information, will agree to lend you money which you can pay off over the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing.
Yeah, when you put it like that, that's...
but part of the reason why they're able to do that is because they know, historically, they knew that if something went wrong, your house is their collateral.
Right.
In the past, house values always tended to increase by whatever the percent was each year, depending on the time period. And so the banks were really in a pretty good position that if someone's unable to pay their mortgage, the bank could foreclose on it. And the value of that asset would have gone up many times from where the bank lent it. So the value of their collateral had increased from where they started. Unfortunately, when the housing crisis happened, everything kind of fell apart. But the process, while it looks really ugly from the outside, mm-hmm. really enables millions and millions of people to have a great life and to have a home that they don't have to save up for 15 or 20 years. So we believe very much in the process, and one of the things we verified we wanted to do was to protect that process and to enhance it. And we realized that while we started this out to build an app or a platform for the sellers to make sure that they could carry the process out correctly, there were so many buyers that wanted to be connected. And for people who have never gone to the courthouse steps to see what a foreclosure looks like, there are videos out there on YouTube. It's very chaotic. There's no set schedule for what anytime something's going to happen, and the buyers are left scrambling trying to find the auctions that they need. There really is no organization. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is we created an app called Verified Alert that the buyers can have on their phones, and it will notify them of a property that they are interested in buying, that the auction's starting. It sends them an alert on their phone, and it also tells them the name of the auctioneer. So we have taken what was a really confusing, chaotic process, mm-hmm. and while it's still not as smooth as we'd like to see it, we've definitely done some amazing things in changing that and helping more third-party buyers purchase these properties.
That's interesting. We're talking with Mike Watkins, the CEO of Verified, a foreclosure software company. They've been in business a little over 2 years with over 20,000 foreclosure sales. And get this, Rich, $1.5 billion in transactions later. How about that?
That's insane. I know we were reading some statistics earlier, and I was going to mention that. But yeah, I mean,
unbelievable.
That's amazing.
I mean, yeah, and where does it go from here? What's on the horizon for Verified, for Mike Watkins, and the rest of the foreclosure industry? Is it going to go state? International, or how's this going to play out?
Well, for us, the biggest thing on our horizon is giving investors or buyers who would like to buy a property the ability to do so from any location. So Georgia law requires the sales have to be read out on the courthouse steps, but it also means that the buyer has to show up on the courthouse steps and find that auction, which can be extremely challenging. It also means that you can really only buy properties in one county per day. Mm-hmm. So if there's a property you would like to buy in Fulton County, and a property you'd like to buy in DeKalb County, and a property you'd like to buy in Forsyth County, you really have to pick one, maybe two. And obviously, if you're buying multiple properties, you've got some sort of team involved. Most people don't have the funds to do that. But we've developed a new technology, which we hope to release early fall, where we can combine the live auction at the courthouse steps with another mobile app or an online platform where people can bid, very similar to eBay, on these properties. And we think that's going to, obviously, as we bring more buyers into the process, we think that drives up the price of the property. That's a proven thing. I mean, more people you have in auction, yeah, the higher the prices go. We think that's fantastic for the banks because they're going to recover more of their funds. We think that's incredible for the neighborhoods, because we have a higher likelihood of a third-party buyer coming in there and fixing up that house and putting a good tenant in place. We think that's great for the homeowners that are there already to try to keep things consistent. And, you know, I might be optimistic and I'm probably a little biased here, but we also think that something like this being in place can go a long way to preventing another meltdown.
Yeah, that's true.
Rich? Rich Casanova here, producer, engineer for Georgia Business Radio. Just reminding your listeners, that's what you're listening to currently. And this, what you described, I've never seen the YouTube videos, but it, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like a picture you imagine from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Just seems chaotic. They're just yelling and screaming and, right?
Yeah, that's actually, you know, I've described Verified for, we started working on Verified about 5 years ago, and that's probably a description I wish I'd had before.
Because people have seen those in movies or in TV or when they do the ringing of the bell, and it's just like this floodgate just open. It just seems like, how does that business take place like that? But that's what you're describing, it seems
like. That's actually a really good description of it.
It is really
it's really extremely chaotic. And if we think about the origins of it, the laws were made about 100 years ago.
Archaic.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to the point. Are you describing this potential new evolution of where folks can bid remotely and not have to be there?
That's correct.
Is that in conflict with what you're describing, that it has to track the GPS and they're actually, what's the
distinction
there? So
here's the thing, is that the auctions still have to be done at a certain location and a certain time and date. And that's never going to change.
Right.
We're not changing that. What we're actually doing is using our technology, which verifies that you were at the correct place, at the correct time and date. And it enables someone who's not in that location, though, to participate in the auction. So the auctioneer, if that's what we want to call it, will still be at the right spot. And it's a merger of the live and online process.
But that investor, they could be bidding remotely, or they have to actually be there?
No, they can be bidding remotely. They could be sitting on a beach somewhere and putting
something
on the phone.
That does bring me to a question where, well, I know one of the processes is you have to present cash or certified funds at the close of the foreclosure document, reading of the document. So how does then that come into play if I'm on the beach having my
martini? You
can
transfer them digitally?
So the way it works is that... First of all, the process is really crazy, and the law states that to buy a foreclosure, you have to present funds, cash in hand at time of sale. You have to use cash.
Mm-hmm.
We've had people give us $80,000-$90,000 in cash,
wow,
which is very scary because, you know, robbing a bank is very hard, but robbing someone walking away from the courthouse steps is very easy.
Okay, and let's delete this from the conversation.
Well, we've protected ourselves against now. So what people do, and most people do not use cash, is that they use cashier's checks in different denominations. And we have people walking around with $15 to $20 million in cashier's checks.
Wow.
So we have a process in place already where they can put funds on deposit, essentially prepay for whatever they would buy.
Nice. Yeah, right.
And that stays within the law. And so anyone wanting to bid remotely has to have the funds on deposit before they bid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you anticipate any changes in the law that would need to be made for the process itself to kind of come up to speed with the times and technology and all that?
Yeah, that would seem a simpler route, yeah.
Are you talking about the
state legislature actually making some changes in how foreclosures are bought and sold and making changes in the laws to make it easier for...
Where they don't have to be on the steps, right?
There are a lot of complications for loosening the rules. You know, if there's a system in place, people will usually find a way to exploit it. And even with the system we have in place now, there are ways that people can exploit it. I will not go into the explanation of that here. But we actually would like for things to go in the opposite direction. We'd like to see the legislatures tighten up the process and focus more on focusing on the legality and making sure that it's done in a way that you can really prove it was done.
One or maybe two more quick questions, depends on how lengthy the answer is to this first one. But you mentioned earlier that Verified potentially could have averted the real estate meltdown. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement. I mean, what's the, you know, how could it have been prevented, I guess, or alleviated with your technology?
So prevent was maybe too strong of a word. We were always going to have an issue because the guidelines that the banks were using for lending were too loose.
Right.
However, there are people that want to own real estate. And real estate is one of the foundations for life. You have to have a place to live. You have to have something to eat. You have to have clothes to wear. So everyone needs a place to sleep at night. And one of the things that the banks did incorrectly was at the beginning of the crisis, they started the opening bid amount on these properties that they were foreclosing on too high. What they did was they bundled all their costs together, and they're essentially said, we're not going to sell it for $1 less than what we're in it for. Mm-hmm. A few years later, they started to realize that that's not good for us because now we have these enormous portfolios of properties, and we're going to have to sell it for $50,000 or $60,000 less than what we're in it for anyway. So with Verified in place, we think that we would have brought many more third-party buyers to the process much quicker. And those third-party buyers are really what stabilized everything, because no longer were the banks just sitting on these houses, but people were buying them. And as more and more buyers came into the process, the prices went up. From the bottom, we have seen the prices on the courthouse steps go up between 30 to 40%. So they've gone up significantly, and people have had to adjust what they're willing to pay for these. And you've also seen very large private equity funds come in, and they own, you know, 40, 50,000 houses now. They're building these enormous funds. Mm-hmm. And it's a different way of thinking about the rental market for them also, meaning instead of, if you think multi-unit, instead of it being apartment complexes, they may own 500 houses in a particular zip code.
Yeah.
It's incredible what they've done. They're really amazing what they've done.
That's great. We've been talking with Mike Watkins. He's CEO of Verified, a foreclosure software company. It's readily available for you on the Google and App stores. It can be used to any network smartphone or tablet device. Delivers real-time results to those coordinating the sale, and also allows them to hold, cancel, or reinstate sales in real time. So lots of layers of use there. If people want to find out more information about you, your services, how can they?
Just go to verified.com. That's Verify with a D at the end. The spelling's a bit funky. That's the new way we do stuff. But like I said, just Verify with a D at the end, and everything's there.
Right. Get all your information there. If you want to learn about, if you're a buyer, you're a seller, you're somebody who could use that technology, please reach out to Mr. Watkins for all of the good stuff there at Verified. So so it looks like to open it up here for just a few more questions for both of our guests, turning our attention back to Hina and Nam here. When you are away from work, when you're not writing your book, and you're not transforming women in the workplace, where's someone you go or something you do to get inspired?
Yeah, so several things. So one of the things is I'm a complete Zumba addict. Have you heard of Zumba?
Oh, yeah, the dance.
Yes.
Exercise,
yes, dance. Yes, yes, yes. So if there was ever a 12-step program, I'd probably dance to it. That's how I do it several times a week. And it gets rid of all the stress, and it's a lot of fun.
So you do that at home, or do you go to a place?
No, there's at the local Y.
At the local YMCA.
At the local Y, yeah.
And you're out there doing your Zumba.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you like that. So that's good. So fitness, dancing, all in
dance.
One.
Dance is what's really gets
very
me
nice.
Sort of inspired and gets rid of a lot of stress for me.
Well, very good. Well, thank you for sharing with us today. Definitely remind our listeners to go check out her book, Wired for Authenticity. You can find that on the Amazon or on her website, wiredforauthenticity.com. And Mike, what about you? When you're not at work, you're not developing brand new revolutionary apps, what do you do to kind of get away from everything and become inspired?
I'm a music junkie.
Are you?
Yeah. I play guitar. I play a little bit of drums, but I also mostly like to go see live shows.
Okay. That's great. So any favorite band or someone that you really, every time you turn it on, you're moved by?
My favorite band by far is Metallica.
How about that, Rock? Can you Zumba to Metallica?
You know what? I'd have to listen to it.
You can.
Well, very good. Well, thank you again for joining us today. And folks can go to verified.com. That's V-E-R-I-F-Y-D for more information about his services. And Rich, that about comes to the conclusion of another episode of Georgia Business Radio. It's been a good week, hasn't it?
Oh, man, it's been great. Just I was scribbling all kinds of notes here, but I like this idea of maybe singing or Zumbing with your dragon. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Right. I think we need to like consult with you for my next book title.
Yeah, I'm all over it. Yeah. I used to write headlines for a living, and you
there
can't
you
turn
go.
It off.
Yeah. There you go.
He probably already owns the domain name.
He
guy's already got 100 domain names in his pocket.
I'm single-handedly keeping GoDaddy in business.
Yeah, that's right.
That's great.
So yeah, let's kind of just wrap up with our week in review of what's the goings on here at the studio for Buckhead Business Radio Extra in the past week.
Yeah, I had a great episode of Atlanta Legal Experts on Tuesday. Yeah. So some good attorneys in here. We always get a good mix of personal injury, family law, criminal defense.
And this week they had folks providing services
to attorneys,
legal.
Right? Yeah. So marketing services, document services, cloud services, all those particularly for attorneys, you know, small practice all the way up to a large firm.
Yeah, phone and IT and all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we did Buckhead Business Radio. We do that each week Tuesday morning at 10. But we had Franchise Business Radio in here Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that was pretty exciting. We had folks from the Southeast Franchise Forum. We had the marketing director for Focus Brands.
And he's been in here before, Paul Macaluso.
Yeah.
And Focus Brands runs quite a wide variety of different restaurants at the Moe's, Slotsky's Deli, McAllister's Deli.
Cinnabon.
Yep.
But again, no sample food, whatever.
They're not invited back until they bring the food
exactly,
in the studio.
Exactly, yeah. No leftovers, yeah. Right. It's always fresh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a highlight for Wednesday.
And then what about tomorrow? We got a special episode.
Yes, we do, actually.
Saturday,
we do a kids business radio show, which is always kind of fun. It's very inspiring to see what the young, up-and-coming entrepreneurs. As a matter of fact, we talk about it a lot, that in past episodes, a couple of kids have been on ABC Shark Tank and gotten deals from some of the sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty exciting to have them here in the studio.
And I always say, behind every young kid entrepreneur is an even more motivated mom and dad, because
absolutely,
they can't do it on their own. Somebody's going to drive them to the studio, help them do that. And some of those parents out there, you know, are living vicariously through their children and their business development. So it's always encouraging kids to get involved in business early. You know, they don't teach that in schools these days, and it's a good lesson in life on entrepreneurship.
I concur 100%.
Yeah.
And then next week we're launching a pilot episode of International Business Radio, so we're very excited about that.
Right. And what are some of those statistics you like to throw out there? There's 80-something consulates
81 international consulates and ambassadors. Right out our window is the French consulate.
Yeah, we're going to go over there and have some pastries.
I know, yeah. Actually, it's funny, and then we found somebody here in our building that also is connected in the international business space. But like I said, we've sent out a invite to about 38 international chambers of commerce. We've already gotten quite a few RSVPs for the show, and so we're going to start doing that. I think it's the fourth Wednesday, I believe it is.
International Business Radio. Tune in next week.
And we're always looking for new shows. So maybe, Ryan, if you turn your
attention
to a couple of...
some of our underwriter categories that we're looking for, you know, community banks, consulting and training, software development, public relations, anybody who's really B2B.
Yeah, B2B. That's
who we're looking for.
That's our
sandbox. We here at Business Radio X help you get in front of those hard-to-reach clients.
Yep.
We also generate content for you and your business. And so it's really a win-win for everybody by being a guest on one of our shows.
And we're always looking for interesting guests with compelling stories to tell. And
So if your company is doing something interesting to generally serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the contact page at buckheadbusinessradiox.com. And pitch us your story. On behalf of Rich Casanova and Georgia Business Radio, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.